Hello and welcome. My name is Megan Lucky, and this is A Lucky Life. Come along with me as I try and get to know myself better and hopefully help you get to know yourself better too. Well, today we are joined by Dr. Lauren DeSico, a doctor of physical therapy who has been practicing nervous system regulation and holistic wellness with her clients for 16 years.
Yes.
Oh, that's a long time.
16 years of practice now. Yep.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And I would love to learn a little bit more about what you do, what you call yourself, and who you work with, if you wouldn't mind sharing a little brief overview for the people who don't know you.
Yes. Thank you for having me. I am a doctor of physical therapy. That's my clinical background. And I've transformed my practice into a little bit more of a holistic approach, really focused on nervous system work, because the nervous system, I believe, is the main controller of how we show up in the world, but all the way down to a cellular level, it's going to control how we can heal our bodies. So in my clinical practice, when I'm treating patients, I'm focusing on making sure that people are in a safe space inside of their bodies, because safety is where we can access proper healing. We're stuck in survival, excessive states of fight, flight, freeze, shutdown. There's a lot of different variety of how we can describe extreme survival states and chronically being stuck there. But if we are stuck there, then we are driving inflammation, we're driving pain, we're driving tissue tension. So if you're somebody that's dealing with an injury, an autoimmune condition, a chronic inflammatory disease, something along those lines, then we need to make sure that your system transitions out of survival and into safety so that it can properly heal itself. When we can set that foundational state, then everything else I do with different modalities that you would typically see with physical therapy work a lot better for the particular person.
Right.
But I also work with people just generally with their nervous system and nervous system regulation, helping them shift how their relationship is with their environment. So our body and our system interpret our environment, and we can either have a healthy relationship with it or an unhealthy relationship with it, driving that survival response. And that can show up in everything from like our health, but how we interact, how we have relationships, how we perform. So I really help people optimize from the spectrum of health all the way to performance.
That's like so important. I also feel like not enough people know this and know just how a dysregulated nervous system is impacting their day-to-day lives. I definitely know that it impacts my life, and it has for a long time. Something that I am curious about, though, because I don't think what this was a main part of your curriculum when you were becoming a physical therapist. So was there a moment for you that you were like, I need to incorporate this? Was there like a pivot moment that you were like, this is something that is not like that I see is lacking in, I don't know, just wellness in general and how you treat clients? Or is it something that you personally kind of had to reflect upon for yourself? Or what was that like? Like, how did you start incorporating nervous system regulation?
I always knew something was missing in the field of physical therapy. I always had that, like, why are these people
underlying sense?
Yeah. So, I mean, typically people will get better with standard treatment protocols and
right.
like that. And obviously you just kind of tweak it for the presentation of the client or the patient.
Right.
But there was outliers that just were not getting better with everything we would do for them.
Wow.
And a lot of times these patients get overlooked or they're almost
like misdiagnosed.
Not even misdiagnosed, but they go from doctor to doctor and they're trying to find the answer. And they're like, I have all of these symptoms. I have all this inflammation.
Like misdirected, maybe.
I have gut issues. I have anxiety and inflammation and I have multiple body parts that hurt. And a lot of times they get written off in the medical system.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, even in like the physical therapy world, it's really sad because it's frustrating to the practitioner. Like, we're doing everything we know how to do. It must be the person. It must be the patient.
Yeah.
So on that side of it, on the clinical side, that's what I was interpreting and reading, like something is missing here. Mm-hmm. And all of those people, what they had in common is they were stuck in survival.
Yeah.
So if I had had those tools in the clinic, it would have been a whole different story, because now the outcomes I get are amazing with how much people can transition and change, but also have the tools for themselves to change.
Yeah.
But I started learning about the nervous system and its role through my own, my own work
experience.
Yeah. And that for me to learn that took me going through a horrible,
like the dark,
horrible rock bottom.
Yeah.
Horrible divorce.
Yeah.
The benefit to the divorce was I also decided to leave mainstream healthcare. So I was like, I can't have my home life be completely upheavaled. And
at
then
the same
At the same time, I chose to do all of it.
Yeah.
But healthcare can be really toxic as well. So the system is really, really broken.
Yeah.
Healthcare providers, we are not optimizing or looking at our own health and wellness and how we're surviving. We are all surviving, hanging on by a thread, totally overworked, not recovering.
So
and it's all about productivity and the dollar, and it's not about the patient anymore. And I was like, I can't participate in this, but have like totally decided to make this huge change in my home life.
Yeah.
So I left and I did start practicing on my own. I did one-on-one clients, cash based, which was great in itself because I got to manage
freedom too.
Yeah. I got to manage how I was seeing the clients. I wasn't, you know, being overloaded and
like supervised. Yeah, with them,
but still I hadn't learned about all of the nervous system stuff. Mm-hmm. It was when I had to explore my rock bottom. How did I get there? And I had all the same symptoms, like autoimmune condition that I mean, going from doctor to doctor, trying to get it diagnosed. I had gut issues, anxiety. I didn't even know I had anxiety. And actually, this, I was such high functioning anxiety.
That's so relatable to so many people.
When I start with clients and they come in, they'll come in for a particular complaint, but then I kind of ask them the questions. I'm like, do you have gut issues?
Yeah. So did you know at this point, like anything about nervous system regulation?
No, I didn't know any. They don't teach you anything about that.
So these were just like, you were noticing these symptoms and just obviously going through a lot.
That was what I thought like my life was.
Yeah.
And then as I left a really toxic environment, home, work, a lot of my symptoms started to go away just on their own. And I think it was just obviously my nervous system wasn't exposed to the things that were triggering me into survival automatically. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know what this felt like to not experience this. So I thought it was normal.
Yeah.
And then I started doing a lot of deep dive, like what even got me into the relationship or the situations I was in.
Yes.
And it led me all the way down the path, the timeline of childhood stuff and really ultimately a lot of complex trauma.
Yeah.
That had hardwired me to think that my environment was normal.
Yeah.
And I was stuck in survival for so long. I was essentially operating in a functional freeze state.
Yes.
Okay. I go fight, flight, functional freeze. Those were my two operating states. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, how do we change this relationship?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously subconsciously rewiring and therapy and things like that were a huge part of it.
Yeah. But tools.
I needed my body to feel different. Because your body is really what receives the information and sends that information up to your brain to tell the brain the story. And if it's not accurate, an accurate interpretation of what's really happening, then you're constantly driving that survival state. So I started to learn everything I could, everything I could, and blending it together and then seeing these huge, massive changes in my own clients.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, this is so amazing. Now I'm taking the work and transforming it into working with, you know, high level performers,
right.
People that are doing well in their health, but we're looking to optimize a little bit more. We want to achieve more without burning out or at the cost of our health, or our family, our relationships and things like that.
Yeah. Do you feel like when you were exploring, you know, the origin of like, how did I get in these spots? And I want to touch on a couple things, but I feel like we talk about these big dramatic changes in our lives as these like big aha moments. And sometimes, especially in the moment, it doesn't feel like it. It's like, I feel like a series of like quieter moments and darkness. I feel like it comes in a lot of times. It comes with like rock bottom, like you said, or darkness. And and realizing how much misalignment is there. Like, I feel like for me, one of my big pivots, and we talked a little bit about this, was like realizing that I was on a path that was objectively a good path. Like, a lot of people would want this. And I felt so guilty for feeling like something was missing, or feeling like things were wrong. And I did have, like, I lost my job and I was, abusing like alcohol and probably like putting too much emphasis on external validation in my life. But when I was like exploring what got me there, I think a lot of it was people pleasing. Maybe I do some fawning, I'm sure. And I also just felt like I was doing my best and doing what I thought I should be doing. And I never had the chance to explore what I really wanted and what was normal and what wasn't normal. And I think, yeah, like peeling back the layers of like influence from the outside environment was a big challenge for me. And I feel like I had to like escape it a little bit to reflect on it. I guess my question, I don't know if I have like a perfect question here, but is that something you see a lot? Or, and is that something that you kind of like had to reflect on? Like, what maybe like this relationship, like what influences were coming not from like an authentic place, but like from outside of you that got me here? Is that like resonating at all?
My relationship in general was based off of societal timeline.
Right. Oh my God. Like, I would love
pressure.
To talk about that.
Yes. thinking, but all of that has to do with the fact that I was letting the external world tell me what to do.
Yes.
Nothing about, because I was so out of touch with myself.
Yes.
I had been so detached from who I really, really was since childhood, probably.
Yeah, me too.
I had to really, in the aftermath of it, figure out when was the last time I felt like myself, like authentically like myself. And it was like, maybe I had a couple times, a few occasions in like high school.
Right. Like in childhood, maybe there was like moments.
Yeah. But it was really, really hard to reattach to who I am authentically and be one with myself. It's really about being whole with yourself.
Yes.
But part of that is being able to sit with yourself. Mm-hmm. And we do so much
escaping.
And it could be alcohol. It could be, but for me, it's being busy.
Yeah.
I love to be busy.
I don't discriminate. I choose all the different addictions and drugs that I can to get away. Yeah.
Whatever it is to avoid being able to sit inside yourself
with the discomfort.
And it's very uncomfortable until it's not.
Yeah.
But the only way you can have any sort of discernment for what's aligned with you and what's not aligned with you is to know what that sensation is inside of your body. The difference between like, this doesn't feel right. And that's where I think where we push ourselves through to do what we think is
we gaslight ourselves all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. So that is honestly the biggest form of betrayal and abandonment you can have is the self-abandonment. But it's so harmful to us, even just at our health level.
Yeah.
This is why women are more likely to have autoimmune conditions.
Wow.
We put everything else or what's expected ahead of us, knowing
like we don't want to be selfish.
We don't want to be selfish, but we also, I think, are born with like really, really great intuition that starts getting stripped from us so young.
You have to come back to it.
You have to come back to it. But I think being able to sit with myself, be vulnerable. But the number one thing that really allowed me to overcome everything that I was going through was taking accountability for it. Because, I mean, we definitely, it doesn't condone anything that's happened or any behaviors of other people that put me in a position or whatever. Even that phrase, put me in the position, that just gave all of my control and power to the external world. So I worked with this amazing trauma therapist, and it's all about the victim triangle. I don't know if you know about this, but where do you lie in this like triangle, this dysfunctional cycle of playing the role of this victim? There's prosecutor and then there's rescuer. Yes. And I just circled through that over and over and over again. And even when I left that dysfunctional relationship, I was still playing the role. Right. So for maybe 5 years after leaving that relationship, I was in more of survival mode at a certain point. Like when I first left, it was great. I was like, good. I'm out of the environment that was the cause of this.
Right.
So I gave the power to the environment
yes.
yet again. But then it still followed me.
Yeah.
It's still because I didn't rewire my relationship with the external factors. Mm-hmm. I was coming back to myself. I was learning a lot.
It just looks different now. Like it's still the control and the power is in the environment. But like, yes, you have this person or whatever situation is now a different situation or whatever, because it is like,
not healed. I'm different. Yeah. So I'm no longer a victim to the situation. So to be honest, a lot of this happens in very toxic relationships is you leave, but a lot of times mm-hmm. there's a lot of post-separation abuse and exposure to the person, especially if there's children involved. So you're not going to not have a relationship with the person. Mm-hmm. So what I thought was keeping myself safe and also hoping that the system would help keep me safe.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
sweet, it doesn't naive trust. Yeah.
It's just not there yet to handle.
Yeah.
So, you have to have radical acceptance that is what it is. Yeah. It's infuriating. It doesn't feel fair. Yeah. It's all of those things. But again, that's giving power to the external world, where the power was within me to figure out, like, how do I take accountability for whatever my role was of keeping me in this dysfunction and pivot to change the response to it. And it changed everything.
Yeah.
So that's one of the biggest takeaways is sometimes when we are stuck in survival, we don't get to leave the environment or the interactions. We don't always have the luxury to do that.
Yeah.
But you can still heal.
Yeah.
You can still thrive in those environments. And obviously if you can leave and you don't need to be exposed to it,
then
you do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not the reality we live in. Mm-hmm. You know, I work with people that have like mold exposure, for example.
Right.
You can't just leave your home.
Like, I know someone close to me that had
have the financial luxury, especially this day and age, mm-hmm. to just be like, oh, I'll just move out of my home and I'll leave it, or I'll just buy a new house.
Yeah.
You can't sell the house with the mold and you can't.
Yeah, so exactly. It's a whole situation.
But you can change your system mm-hmm. and how it's interpreting and responding. Instead of it responding in survival, it can respond in a different way so that, you know, it doesn't have the same impact on your system.
Yeah.
The same can go for workplaces or different environments and stuff like that. You can still like find.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you can't leave
sometimes. Like there really is that, like, you know, the survival that I feel like, and I feel like I've heard you talk about this before, like needing sometimes we have this survival mode for a reason. And sometimes we need it to survive, but it's about finding the peace in it sometimes and finding the ability to not need it all the time or not use it all the time. And I feel like some of us are just wired to
So it has to be like appropriate to the stimulus. So we're taking in sensory information internally and externally all of the time.
Yeah.
And that's giving us feedback into our system to tell us, like, do I need to be more activated? Do I need to run from this dangerous thing right here? Like it's there for a reason. It is there to serve a purpose and a very, very good purpose. But when we're under chronic micro stimulus all of the time, or you have a huge traumatic event that totally overloads and overwhelms your system, and then you're just stuck there, then we're misinterpreting our environment and our stimulus essentially. So we have to learn how to regulate or bring yourself signal safety back into your system so that you can flex out of that. So it's not about being out of survival all of the time. It's about being able to flex on and off in response to the stimulus and make sure that it's like accurate and adequate. And then we go back to baseline. So how quickly you can flex on and flex back down to your baseline is really
like a measure of health,
right? Like the resilience. Resilience is what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. Resilience and flexibility in your nervous system is really, really what we're looking for a healthy nervous system.
And so when it came to like your own situation, like, what did you learn about your own resilience while going through this? And then how did you bring that into your work?
I
feel like you kind of talked about it. So like,
but I also think as women, especially being strong all the time is,
oh my God. Yeah.
So it's great to be strong. And I was so strong.
Yes.
I had to be strong.
Yes.
But I was on
all the time.
Pushing through, waiting for the end.
And not feeling.
Waiting for this to all stop. Mm-hmm. That I just had to hang on a little bit longer until everyone could see what the situation was here mm-hmm. and come help me and save me, essentially. Right. So I could definitely very strong. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are very strong, but I had to learn how to be resilient, which yeah. was handle situations appropriately when they appeared, but then go back to my baseline and live my life and be present and grounded mm-hmm. and there and safe for my children. And I wasn't doing that when I was always being strong. Mm-hmm. I was like closed off, essentially.
Yeah.
So I think the hard part was actually learning that there's a huge difference between being strong and being resilient.
Yeah.
And resilience also requires like...
It's better.
Being vulnerable.
Yeah.
Being open. Like I'm very, very open with my clients.
Like we're so taught to suppress that too mm-hmm. in this society, like vulnerability.
Yeah. I'm very open with the people I'm close with my clients. Mm-hmm. Because I think people also need to see like you're going through it. Like I've lived what I am trying to teach to yeah. my clients and want them to learn. And that yeah. there's a better side to it. Mm-hmm. It sucks, but there is a better side to yeah. it as well.
I think for me, like as someone who wants to go into more of a field that is holistic and helping to others, I definitely feel imposter syndrome in, well, my life is not perfect. And I have all of these things that I'm still working on. And hey, maybe that's why I'm still not there yet, where I'm ready to give the best help that I can. But is that something that when you were going through this, because did you ever stop practicing? Like, is that something that you struggled with? Like building yourself up while trying to build others? Like, how did you take care of yourself? And how do you still take care of yourself so that you can be there for your clients and be there for your kids and be there for everybody else? And I know we kind of talked about like how being strong is like a double-edged sword sometimes. Like mm-hmm. there's sometimes you need to be strong for yourself and like, yeah, be resilient and not always put up a front and be there for everybody else. So what does that look like in a daily practice for you? Like, how do you take care of your own nervous system and your own needs while also everybody else's? Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, because I have such a long-standing history of survival, essentially,
yeah.
I practice daily nervous system work and mm-hmm. self-regulation. Mm-hmm. So, and that's how I start a lot of my clients too. I teach them how to, you know, activate certain parts of their nervous system, especially through like the vagus nerve is a huge part of that. Mm-hmm. It's a two-way street between our body and our brain that sends a lot of messages and interprets a lot yes. of data. And, but the nice part about it, it's when we stimulate it, it helps to balance our system back out and pull us into the best part of our nervous system. Mm-hmm. So I will practice, you know, different forms of vagus nerve stimulation, self-regulation, ways to feel safe in my body, yeah. somatic work. And once you're in that place of safety, then a lot of times you can be more in touch and in tune with, am I in alignment? Or is there like some emotion sitting in there? You know, sometimes if I'm not having a good day,
yeah.
I have to respect that.
Yeah. And just like,
I used to just be like, we're going to have a good day.
Yeah. Like
day.
Try and force it. Like, no, sometimes it's just a bad day
and you can start that over. That will actually drive you into further, you know, like
I believe that.
That's where you start to shut down.
Yeah.
And then go into things like, you know, trying to find motivation and your flow and your yeah. creativity. Like you can't access that if you're in survival. So yeah. one, just recognizing where I'm even at my nervous system.
Yeah.
Self-regulation. And then on days where maybe I'm feeling more emotional or whatever, actually sitting with it to what is it? But to sit with it, you have to feel safe.
Yeah.
So a lot of people who are trying to come back to themselves and work on mindset and things like that.
Yeah.
Create safety in your body first. And a lot will change for you. Now that what comes up when you are actually back in your body and you feel safe in your body, you're going to have a lot of processing that happens.
Yeah.
So you can't be scared of that part. Crying,
yes.
grieving,
yes.
anger, frustration. Like I had so much grief that I didn't even know I had. But if I think back in my whole life, I don't know when I've ever grieved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like we really don't grieve.
Yeah.
But I had to grieve, you know, obviously the loss of a relationship
yeah.
or what a life, a version of a life that
future.
I thought
that you thought was?
The biggest grief I had was losing the childhood experience I thought my children were going to have. It is so different. So different than I ever imagined. Yeah. And I had so much grief
around
that. You
hold on to it too, probably for that was probably what
Well, even you. Watching other people experience what I wanted to have with my children, what I envision having with my children, you know, just like the luxury of going to a sporting event on the weekend.
Yeah.
Like I didn't have that anymore. And I had to grieve that version in order to move forward
and make the most.
Because the life that I have with my children now is so much richer, even though it's not the perfect.
Yeah. Like stereotypical, what you think you're supposed to
have. Again, what was ingrained into us of what we, the level of parenting I can do now, how present I can be. We don't look like a typical household at all, but I think the experience allowed me to become such a different version of myself and level up as a parent because I was required to.
Yes. And, but also like you chose to, like, I feel like there had to be so much awareness and accountability to be able to know that if I don't grieve this, it's going to show up in all these little ways of like, maybe like you said, like jealousy or like resentment and like coming through and like
there's layers, right?
Yeah.
There's layers of like emotional, like when you get that like grief out of you or whatever, like what really sits under it or something. Well, I think I had a lot of resentment and then anger and disappointment.
Right.
But underneath it was the grief.
Yeah.
So once
once
layers. You kind of like get that out, then it's a whole different world. So I don't know. We're so off the question.
That's okay. We said this was going to be just like a flowing conversation. I know. I have like so many things are coming up like while you're speaking that I'm like, oh, I want to talk about that. I'm like so interested, but I feel like, just like going through something so dark, it's so hard to like see the other side. Is there anything that like you would want to tell yourself in that moment? Like in that, like, this is happening. Like, this is like, my world is kind of like, my rug is getting pulled out from under me. Like, I feel like everything you just said would be great to tell her back then. But like anyone going through some like rock bottom right now, I feel like, again, it is such a propellant. It is such like, if you let it be, because it really can't, like, I feel unfortunately a lot of the time in our life, the best things happen because we went through something really dark.
Anytime someone's going through some shit, I'm like, good for you.
It's, it's like, congratulations. Like
congratulations.
I have started hearing like, I don't know where eventually I heard this, but like, oh, I'm getting divorced. It's like, congrats. Like, cause you know what? There is so much on the other side that you're going to discover and be able to mold.
If you can allow yourself to sit in the shit.
Yeah.
You have to sit in the shit to have that upgrade, I think.
Yeah.
If you're just like, whatever life and keep trucking on the way you trucked on, like everything that all the patterning is going to go show up in the future.
Yeah.
I knew I wasn't going to repeat the past.
Yes.
So I was like, I need to figure out how did I get myself here?
Yes.
I will say in the post
accountability,
separation, rock bottom.
Yeah.
The thing I wish I allowed myself to do sooner and would have told myself, but because I was being so strong and holding it all together, I didn't ask for a lot of help.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I was trying to just put on the face and hold it together, grow a business while I'm getting financially destroyed.
So overwhelming.
In the legal system.
Yeah.
Trying to scrape up money from
like
somewhere.
Like have that face. Like I've got it all together.
I've got a business that's thriving. Yes. I decided to start my own business. I'm going to show everybody I can do it.
Yeah.
I was literally, like almost bankrupt from this.
Yeah.
Children who were unraveling at home because they were feeling the pressure of everything.
Yeah.
Me, I wasn't necessarily emotionally present because I was keeping it all together.
Yeah.
And then realizing like it took it turning into a crisis essentially.
Yes.
For me to finally get the help from a team.
Yeah.
The right team.
Yes.
I'm not going to take credit and say like, oh, I just regulated my nervous system and everything was great. No, I worked with amazing professionals who really knew how to handle trauma and show me how to take accountability.
Yes. Be honest with yourself.
Be there for my kids. That was the biggest thing. Create safety inside of my home again. But I needed someone to ground me to be able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I needed to be the person, the initiator of the safety. I needed to feel safe inside of myself again.
Yeah.
And whole inside of myself. So then I could handle the environmental stuff differently. But again, I refused to give up my business in this. Yeah. I was like, there is no way I'm going back to a clinic.
And you were able to find that way.
Right.
I was like, without giving it up, but also not, being honest with yourself.
Not by staying strong, though. Mm-hmm. Not trucking through, surrendering, giving it up to X, you know, like allowing the accountability, all of that stuff. You cannot. I needed to be really creative.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have money.
Yeah.
So I was like, how am I going to grow a business with no money and for my children to like.
And without letting this like stop you or
right.
completely
so
steamroll you.
But you cannot be creative if you're in survival.
Mm.
So transitioning that then allowed me to access the motivation, the creativity. And
having the help.
Getting the right help.
Yep.
Getting back to myself, all of that, getting myself regulated allowed me to then access the creativity I needed to find money or
be scrappy.
Or whatever I needed to do to grow my business. And it honestly, like in the last couple of years has completely changed even how my business operates.
That's amazing. And I feel like, that's actually one of my New Year's resolutions is to like get better asking for help and knowing when to. And
so being vulnerable.
Being vulnerable and being honest with myself. Like, because again, it's shame, I think, is one of those things that really keeps me in chronic stress or chronic survival mode. And balance, I feel like, is the magic word we always are striving for, which is true. It's life. You know, life is balance, and it's never going to be perfect. You're never going to be perfectly balanced all the time. Like sometimes you will go through periods where you're stuck in survival mode too long and you have to pull yourself out of it so that you can get better and better at it. But I definitely feel like I had all these shame narratives that, oh, you never stick to anything. You never finish anything. And I was so like determined to prove it wrong, prove that voice wrong and not listen to that voice that I wasn't truly honest about, okay, well, where am I not finishing things? And where do I want to get better at doing that? Like, where do I want to work on myself and be honest with myself so that I can change it? Because if I keep like having this, like, do you know Gabby Bernstein? I feel like we talked a little, she calls them protector parts. If I keep having this protector part show up and like be defensive and feel like, no, that's not true. It's not true. Like I'm going to prove it wrong. If I don't acknowledge where in my life I am doing that and like truly sit with that, then I'm never going to ask for help. I'm never going to be able to overcome these challenges that I have because of these shame narratives. So I feel like, for me, like finding the balance of coming from a place of love with myself and accountability and honesty.
Well, I think one thing about what you're saying is the way we address ourselves when there's things going on that we don't like, we would never talk to anyone else like that. Yeah. So learning how to look inward with compassion and love, because you can have all of those parts of you, but they're like a compass.
Yes. Yes.
Rather than like, I don't like this.
Yeah.
What is it that you're telling me? Like, what is the message you're sending me right now that I can then do something about is a lot better way to approach it. And it pulls you out of survival faster because if you were like self-deprecating or talking, someone, a bully walked up to you and talked to you like that, you would go right into fight or flight or shut down or whatever.
And you're doing it to yourself.
But then you're also causing inflammation and all of these things.
Yes.
But we're doing this to ourselves instead of taking a step back and being like, okay, like what is it that you are telling me that you need to change to shift the sensation that you're giving me in my body? Because really it's a sensation, like shame, like we feel that.
Yes.
You know, so it's a message that's coming up and then we're interpreting it and then we're telling the story around it and how we've been patterned to talk to ourselves. This is usually because someone spoke to us like that.
Yes.
So a lot of times it was not even your voice in your head saying
exactly
that.
And acknowledging that too is a big piece of, I feel like, being able to change it or acknowledge it and grow. So that's definitely something that I'm still working on. And I feel like it's an ongoing journey and it gets better the more that you do it, the more that you sit with discomfort. And I'm still working on it. And I think that's an important reminder that it's like, it's always a journey to a degree, but you do improve. You do like get better.
I don't think there's ever a time that we stop our healing process.
I'm good.
You're not healing. Yeah. You're dead. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God. I love that. I also feel like this is something that you have talked about before that I really resonated with. Just like, I feel like there's so many words that we use, like lazy or like stuck, that, you know, there are times that those words may represent things that are actually just self-preservation, and there are things that are kind of good for us at times. Can you speak more to that a little bit? Because I feel I definitely resonate with that.
Yeah, a lot of those behaviors or actions or lack of actions are self-preservation.
Yeah, it's like your body's telling you something.
Yeah, if you can look at it as a physiology rather than, oh, this is who I am, this is my personality or whatever, and this is like, some people are lazy and some people are whatever. We can start to look at it from the perspective of a nervous system state. It makes it a lot more digestible, but a lot more empowering to then know I can actually shift this.
Yeah.
And it's there's
in my control somewhat. Yeah.
Yeah. So actually when you're more shut down or showing up in a way of like lack of motivation, stuck, frozen, a lot of people will like bed rot all weekend, for example.
Yes, that's a good example.
It's like your nervous system is demanding that because you've overwhelmed it for days on end. So now it's crashing and burning because it needs to recover and preserve because you didn't allow the recovery throughout the week or the day or however long you've been trucking on or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, yes, we have to respect that and move gently, basically. Be gentle and initiate movement to help you move out of it so that you're not frozen, essentially.
Yes.
But to force it is going to create more shutdown. Yes. So that's how I learned to like days that I'm not doing well or, you know, like I still have those days,
sometimes.
I'm just really nice to myself. I don't hole up in bed or anything like
that. Is that something you've always been good at?
Oh no. Oh no. Yeah. I would be like, you're so lazy.
Yes. Yes.
Like, what is your problem? Like, get up and do it. Like what I would do is just like emotional bypass myself. Like, there's no point in crying. Like, what would be the point of that? Like, get the shit done.
Yeah.
Like, what is,
you're weak. Like, it's like,
Like, well, you're wasting time.
And we
need to do these things.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, I feel like I do so much less now, but get way more done.
Yes. Yes.
I'm so much more productive.
Oh my God. That is something so many people don't understand, myself included, but I'm trying to like get better at it. Doing less to do more.
Yes. Yeah.
When I was in my pivot era, I was doing like I had a great corporate job, you know, very 9 to 5, more than that at the time. But, and I felt like I really had to lose my job and go through this, okay, like, what do I want to do more with my life? And I was like, oh, I want to, you know, be more in the wellness industry. I want to serve more than doing like a finance job, 9 to 5, which I'm now still doing. But I had to go through that and then come back to my 9 to 5. And like, I'm now doing that. I had to find like, it's okay to do this. But now, because I have done some of the work to heal my nervous system a little bit and discover authentically who I wanted to be more. Now that I have that, I can do more where before I was burnt out doing my 9 to 5, before I thought I had no room or energy to do anything else. Like if you would recommend something that may have really helped me back then, I'd be, I don't have time. Mm-hmm. I don't have time. I can't do this. Now I do so much more and I have the same job, you know, like I am back at the same job, but I do still, like I started this podcast. I am going back to school. I am a yoga teacher. Like I have all these other, I read, I do all these things that you could have told me that I would be like, no way I could do all that. That sounds so overwhelming to me, but I don't feel like I'm doing more. Like I feel like it's fueling me. It fuels me and I'm doing less because I'm less like stressed. I'm less in my head. Again, not perfect. Like I definitely still have moments, lots of moments. But it's better. Like it's still like it's still so much better than it used to be. And I still don't feel like I'm doing more. I feel like I'm doing less.
Right. Well, you're doing things that fill your bucket.
Yes.
Too.
Yes. I love that analogy.
So that's, you know, a huge part of the nervous system work is if we're always exposing ourselves to things that are taking or overwhelming or whatever without having the capacity to handle it because we haven't done any nervous system regulation.
Yeah.
So like early on working with people who don't have those internal resources essentially to have them calibrate appropriately to stress.
Yeah.
I tell them anything you can take off your plate right now. Anything that does not serve you. Yes. Like if you have a job, go to your job.
Yes. Yes.
But that like, serves you, you know, minimize for, certain interactions. Finances. Or if there's somebody that like gets around you and your nervous system is like on fire around them right now, you need to boundary that. That's right now, until you reestablish and rewire the proper resources internally to be able to handle that exposure. But when your system is like on fire and it's chronically dysregulated and you're feeling the way you were feeling early on with your job, like I just cannot handle anything else in my life. You have to clear the plate first. You got to step back. Your luxury was you got fired.
Yes.
So you got to.
Yes, it was a luxury.
You essentially.
I knew it deep down. I knew.
You essentially got the ability.
Yes.
An opportunity to rewire your system, to come back with a different, like you came back a different, with a different physiology, essentially.
Yes. Yeah.
So, and I tell people, I'm like, do things that warm your soul. That's how you know that you're filling your bucket.
And be around it, people.
So people that you can see that feel safe and secure, animals that feel safe and secure, environments. Mm-hmm. So if you have like that cozy spot in your house or the beach, things that actually make you feel warm and cozy inside, those are regulating your nervous system.
Yeah.
And keep out in the early stages, boundary out the things that are dysregulating so your system can come back to neutral in your day-to-day life.
Yeah.
And then we start to like rewire those internal resources that help your system naturally flex on and off. So then when we reintroduce you to the workplace.
Yeah.
Or the toxic person or whatever,
you have a better,
your body has a different relationship with it.
Yeah.
So I think I see a lot of times, especially on social media, taking all the bad people out of your life.
Yeah.
I get that.
Sometimes that's not possible either.
Sometimes that's not possible, but also we get to be the people that are in charge of our bodies and our nervous systems. And I actually get to the point now where there could be a toxic person in the room, but like they're not shifting my nervous system. They're not dysregulating me because I have the stronger nervous system. Whoever has the stronger, more stable, regulated nervous system is actually who the room is going to co-regulate to. Co-regulation is amazing. So people talk a lot about
the opposite true. Like if there's a really strong dysregulated.
So most people are not good at regulating their nervous system. So we allow whoever has the strongest nervous system, usually it's someone who's wildly dysregulated.
I was like
that has shitty energy.
It's similar to like the loudest in the room with like social media too. Like that's who you're going to hear. Like the people who, and
doesn't
mean it's right.
But so I don't always agree with the fact like people are like, oh, only surround yourselves with this and this.
Yeah.
But you have to do that. If your system needs help regulating.
Yeah. If you're in that phase that we just talked about.
It is easily swayed by other people's nervous systems. And so co-regulation is
protect yourself.
Co-regulation is a huge, huge benefit as far as like, if I want to co-regulate or if I want to regulate or feel better quickly, I know if I go around a person who's feeling safe and secure, I'm going to feel that.
Yeah.
But if you're exposing yourself to people that have like bad attitudes or they're always dysregulated or they're very negative, you are going to take that on until your system is really good at holding its own state.
Yeah.
So I generally do a very good job keeping because I have to hold space for people all day long.
And you're,
so can you imagine if you came in for treatment and I'm all over the fucking place.
Yes.
And that's what you're going to feel.
Yeah.
Because your system doesn't know what it's supposed to feel. I'm the one that's leading the room.
Yeah.
So if you can, so say you work with a bunch of 10 employees and you're always going in, you're like, oh, it's so stressful in here. And like when whoever comes near me, I feel it in my body.
Yes.
But when you practice this and you can hold the nervous system in the regulated space, you don't feel that anymore. They're not able to take over your system. And actually they have to regulate to you because you have the more dominant nervous system.
Wow. That is so crucial. I was actually going to ask about that. That's perfect. Because I definitely have people in my life who I love them dearly and I don't necessarily want to cut them out. Like, I feel like there's a lot of like toxic lines of social media that talk about like, oh, cut them out. Like there's that extreme. And then there's the extreme of like, no, you got to tough it out. Like this is like, there's all these like old mm-hmm. narratives that's like, oh, whether it be family, whether it be whatever, like you got to give everybody immense grace. And I think I definitely grew up with that narrative. So if it's a spectrum, I'm more on that side mm-hmm. and I don't align with, I need to cut everyone out all the time. There are some people that, yeah, they have too strong negative energy that I really do. I can with love cut them out. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a big middle ground of people who, yeah, maybe they're not going to be my everyday people. They're not going to be my safe people, but I love them. And I can have a relationship with them on my terms. Like you said, like being that comfortable and secure in your own nervous system to know that when you can handle them. And I think right. that is something I've definitely gotten a lot better at as I've gotten older.
But you have to be in tune with yourself to yeah. to recognize like,
and sometimes I'm not.
Who yeah. whose system is so strong they're taking over oh, everything yeah. or like, and they do need to be boundaried.
Yes,
or, boundaries are boundaries. What that's allow what you
yes.
to have relationships with people that are
and that's not something
not
I,
super healthy.
So. I always understood. I had to learn boundaries for oh, sure.
Boundaries were a no-no for me.
Yeah, me too. So
I was always like, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah, no.
So that's why my go-to survival mode a lot of times was like freeze. Like I would dissociate and just because I was keeping mm-hmm. myself in situations for way too long that I yes. shouldn't have probably. So I would just like fawn and freeze.
Yes. Me too.
Play the game.
Just
but it's I was like dead all, inside. Yeah. So, but now, yeah. now, you know, like I can still have, like the exposure from people that, I mean, it's not all the time, every day. And right. I know how to manage my side of the relationship where I'm not creating more interaction and meshment entanglement mm-hmm. with these yeah. messy people. But yeah. I still am able to show up appropriately in the way that is required from me to parent.
Yes, or exactly. That's a good example.
Whatever
people
it
you
is.
Cannot cut out.
Yeah, it's just, it is what it is. And yeah. that's, you know, that is who my children's going to have in their life.
Yeah.
That's their life.
Yeah.
That's their life and their experience. And I'm not going to add any chaos to it yeah. or dysfunction to it.
Which is but hard.
I also don't have the ability to just say, nope, I'm not doing it.
Right, right. Like not today.
Because that's not serving my children yes. either. Yeah. So yeah, just completely rewiring and like being able to be the one that holds the space and holds the regulation yeah. is so empowering for everything,
yeah.
you know?
I definitely think that's so important. And I have two more questions before we, I think, kind of have to wrap up. But one of them is what impact do you think social media has had on? Because I know that in a lot of ways it's been amazing because we have never had so much access to all these things that really can help us and are helping us mm-hmm. And tools that can help us and awareness to language like this, like fawning, freeze, you know, fight or flight, all these things that we're learning about. But there's also, again, it's a double-edged sword where it's like, we almost use it as to stay stuck or we don't. I think for me, I'm also someone who is not good at dropping into my body. Like I am so in my head. I need to, one of my New Year's resolutions is also like trying somatic therapy, trying things that allow me to get more into my body. Cause I'm very good at psychoanalyzing, a little too good. Now mm-hmm. I need to like, let it like be in my body. And I think that's something I struggle with. And I think social media plays a little bit of a role in that, not just that, but so I think I have two questions. We can start with what impact do you think social media has and what do you recommend people, like how people use it for their own lives and have maybe boundaries with it so that it doesn't, I don't know, take over because it can also be toxic for a whole other list of reasons. But I think in regards to what you're learning about your nervous system, like,
yeah, it's great because you can get some really great information yeah. from social media. I mean, I basically grew my business yeah, because of social media. Like, thank yeah. God.
It can be a great tool.
Yeah. Like, and, you know, and I know for as a professional using social media, I am not going to participate in the toxic sides of it. I'm going to make sure the information I'm putting out there is accurate. Yes. It's valuable. Mm-hmm. As a user of social media,
yes, more.
it yeah. is very easy to get sucked up in that. I have to be very careful with the exposure of what I see, especially when it comes to the professional side of imposter syndrome, comparison. Like one of my, I would say like core wired belief systems is this like comparison thing. And I've had 100%. To work very hard on not going down the comparison.
It's social media is an absolute recipe.
Spiral. It's a spiral for me. Yeah. So I'm very careful with the things that I'm exposed to on there.
Yeah.
If I feel that sensation in my body of like, ooh, like it's, there's a certain sensation I feel in my system when I get triggered into the comparison cycle. So I'm aware of that. So I'm
you have
like
that
very,
bodily awareness. Yeah. That I'm literally still, it's a language. It's like learning a new language to figure out. Yeah, what is my body telling me?
Yeah, yeah. If I get like a pit in my stomach or something like that, when I'm exposed to something or see something,
like with this comparison.
You know, obviously my algorithm has a lot of other professionals that are like me. So then I'm like, oh my gosh, I missed the boat. They're all doing it. Yeah, yeah. I'm so behind.
Oh my God, I completely relate. Yeah.
But there's like a small percentage of people that are looking at what I'm looking at. And so it looks like the whole world is doing this. So your reality is definitely very skewed.
And everybody has their own shit, whether it's like, you know, the same as yours or not, you know, it's just, you have to not look at the highlight reels as.
Right.
It's,
and intentionally using it where you're not looking for any sort of validation. So you have to be very aware of what is it that you're using social media for? Is it to escape? Mm-hmm. Is it to numb out?
Yeah.
Is it to have some sort of validation? Because then you're going into very toxic sides of social media. And there are, I mean, massive studies on mental health and social media and the suicide rates and stuff like that. So time exposure is a big part of it too. Mm-hmm. Like staying under 2 hours a day.
Yeah.
Which is still a lot of time.
Yeah, it's still a lot of time, but it's still
hard.
We
all know we can scroll till 4 a.m.
Sucks you in.
Because obviously it's
meant to.
It's they have neuroscientists that made it so that you stay in this loop on it. It's disgusting.
It's so bad.
Think about it.
It's so bad.
It is really bad.
But that's why you have to be your own hero. Like you have to
create your own time limits, you know, maybe only make certain spaces where you use your phone.
Yeah.
If you have families, I actually just did a presentation on this with a company about how to boundary, especially with children and stuff, because children are getting on these things and taking it away is like a drug because of the dopamine that's attached to it. Yeah. So,
So
a lot of times we're dysregulated. So then we know how to self-soothe with this like dopamine.
Yeah. Well, that's my second question. My second question was like going back to how we talked about filling your cup and doing things that feel warm and doing things that fuel you. I think it's very easy to like tell yourself like, oh, I'm going to bed rot and scroll to get away from this other thing to essentially like relax, but it's not, I know. And I think it's about knowing in yourself that that's not actually helping you. But yeah, I think that that's something that for a long time I confused filling my cup with like, oh, I'm going to spend time like watching Netflix or like I'm binging, like doing things that are not, or eating comfort foods that are not healthy for me, you know, like doing habits that yes, maybe it's not my 9-to-5 job that's stressing me out, but it's also not filling my cup and it's keeping me in that cycle too. So it's like, yeah. How do you recommend people? But also again, like sometimes it's, you can't help it. Like sometimes, like you said,
I think it's okay to have an escape.
Yeah. Like sometimes you do it and that's
I think
okay.
I think honestly, it's healthy sometimes to dissociate and
there
zone
you go.
Out.
See, that's good. Yeah.
But how long are you doing that?
Yeah, exactly. And like,
so I think
being honest with yourself,
I think
with love,
I'm not a hardcore, cause I just think it leads to too much failure.
Yeah.
I think, but set yourself up for success, because even if it's like the tiniest little thing, like you need to experience that. So then you desire more of that.
100%.
So if it's trading your bed rotting for the whole weekend, make it like a time slot. Mm. I like to time chunk things, like difficult things, a time chunk for myself. Cause I don't use anxiety for productivity anymore.
Oh my gosh. Wait, that's interesting because sometimes.
Which then I'd struggle with because I'm like, that. I'm not very productive because I don't have this like anxious fear telling me to just do all the time.
Right.
So I had to go back to some structure of structuring time frames for certain things because otherwise I'm like, I guess I'm more type B than I ever knew.
Right.
But your
survival mode was
I want to do these things. I'm motivated to do these things. When I set the time to do these things, I'm like very focused and I mm-hmm. get it done and I'm very creative.
Yeah.
And then I feel good when I'm done, but I'm not scrambling around all day anxiously trying to do things. But yeah, so I think still allowing yourself some of the things like if you need to escape, just don't escape for
forever.
10 hours.
Yeah.
You know, come back to the world. We do also need to be, you know, having connection with people and, you know, building relationships. That's really as humans, what we're meant to be here doing. And that's the thing with like
social
bed rotting and social media is we are becoming so, even though we're connected online,
it's fake. Yeah.
We need real human connection, in-person connection. Yeah. So I usually say like with that kind of stuff, fill your cup. You know, you honestly have to explore with yourself what the things are that truly fill your cup.
Yes. Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Especially because I love to just do what everybody else wants to do.
Right.
So I was like, what do I even like to do? Yeah, I don't even know.
Exactly. You gotta spend that time.
And it's easy stuff. It's not, it doesn't have to be like go to the spa or anything like that. It's like, listen to your favorite music. You know, feel the earth underneath you.
Yeah. Like, outside. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so true.
Like very easy stuff, but you have to know what that is and what that feeling is.
And
like,
it has to come from you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can try, like you can listen to podcasts, you can, you know, Google things, but ultimately you have to find what works for you and it's not going to come from anybody else. But yeah, there's good inspiration, of course, if you need a jumping off point, but I definitely think it's so important to explore, figure that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing is sitting with yourself,
yeah.
getting back to knowing yourself. Yeah. And it's really uncomfortable at first, but if you can do some things to feel safe in your body, safety first, feel soothing and safe inside your system. And then you can come back into yourself and explore.
I have another question I just thought of, but, if we have time for it, I'm someone with ADD. Like I grew up with really bad ADD. And so routine is something that's always been very hard for me. Even that word is triggering. I've rebranded it to rituals, like little rituals. But what advice would you give someone who has trouble with structure but needs it? Like what tools do you give your clients who, you know, are, I don't want to say type B, but who have more of a tendency to not gravitate towards structure, but know that it's something they need in doses or like in a balanced way?
Yeah. I mean, if it's something that if there's something specific that you're trying to get done and you've been
like
distracted or avoid it, or you procrastinate till the very last minute,
that's so
I usually say time chunk, like set a period of time, like
that works for me.
30 minute timer. Mm-hmm. This is the only thing I'm doing for 30 minutes until my timer goes off.
Work yourself up to that. Yeah.
Day to day for nervous system health and just to get your system on more of a structure without it being a regimented scheduled day.
Yeah.
Trying to keep a bedtime.
Yes.
Like a same bedtime, little same wins. Wake time.
Yeah.
Expose yourself to bright light, early morning sunlight.
Okay.
Just good. Because then you're setting your circadian rhythm.
Yeah.
Because that's good. Like internally, we need to have that rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
So that we feel less chaotic throughout the day. If we're all over the place with our bedtime and our morning, and then we're not getting sunlight and things like that, our system is already in a little bit of chaos.
Right.
So then we're trying to lay down structure over a chaotic system. So get that. That's super easy to do without feeling like you just added more to your plate.
Yeah.
All you're doing is shifting your schedule and that's it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like move your body. Move your body, because naturally you'll start to fall into, like, if you do the same activity every single day, you know, starting and ending, you'll naturally start to lay out a schedule for yourself during the day.
I love that. And I think that,
without there being too much pressure.
Yeah. I like that. And again, not like being so super black and white thinking of like, it's looking at the whole day. And if I don't do this one thing in this way, this whole day is ruined or I wasn't productive and whatever. It's just like,
don't set yourself up.
Just okay. And I am very guilty of like, I give myself a million goals and then it's like, I feel so shitty afterwards. Cause I didn't get all of them done, but I got like
beware, be honest with yourself.
Do you do that in a day?
In a day.
Three. Three. That's good. See, I didn't know that.
Just three. I was a chronic list maker. I like make my list, scratch one thing off, rewrite my
list. I am a chronic list maker. Oh
but I think that's a little bit like that was like my coping mechanism having a very scattered brain. Like if you have a lot of trauma.
Oh my God. Yes.
Like history of trauma. You can have very ADD or ADHD like tendencies.
Well, that's what I interviewed an ADHD coach and we talked about just how much it's tied to emotional dysregulation too, like mm-hmm. and nervous system dysregulation. Like there's so much of, I guess, the symptoms that are so similar or that just, you know, like, and I think a lot of it is that as well for me. Like, I really think it's coming back to like, okay, let's peel back the layers and work on the nervous system because like, oh my God, is that like, so does that so resonate with me? Chronic list making as a coping mechanism and just like chronic distraction. And like
how much time did I just spend making
Yes. Like, well, that didn't help me do any of my goals. Like it felt good though. Like there's like, but it's not, it's one of those things that's just like not really filling my cup, but making it worse in a way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyways, I think that's something that I'm definitely working on, like getting my morning sun. I think back to when I moved into New York and I called it depression dungeon because we had a one bedroom flex to a three bedroom and I had the room with no windows and my whole apartment didn't have windows except my two roommates' bedrooms. And it was COVID. So I was like stuck there for a lot and in New York City. Oh my God. It's a recipe for disaster because I thought I signed the lease thinking I'm never going to be here because, I'm in the city, I have a job. And then COVID hit and I was like, I had to work from my bed and I had like I didn't have that exposure to like my system was so messed up.
You wouldn't
up.
Even know if it was day or night.
I had no idea.
I was just in Illinois and it was, you know, like the sun goes down at 4:30 and I'm like, I could feel the massive shifts of motivation.
Yes. Oh God.
Just like that drive.
We always complain about
that. Every day. I was definitely going into that like hibernation, almost like shutdown mode. I was like,
yes.
Oh. Yeah. But, getting sunlight is like one of the simplest things you could do.
I like that. Cause I wasn't doing that.
It doesn't have to be like crazy intense exercise, but it's just mobilize your body and that will shift your system as well.
That's so big. I think I also had so much shame around, I'm not like a very exercise motivated person. So I thought I had a way that I viewed movement and exercise because I had that narrative around it. And I was like, that's too overwhelming for me. And then it was a cycle. I just didn't want to do it, but it really is gentle movement is sometimes all you need. And that's what I needed. And then I became a yoga teacher and even still, like there's so many different types of yoga and I had to like find what worked for me. And I think, you know, I taught at a studio that had both like hot, intense workout yoga, but also like spiritual side. And I definitely gravitated more towards spiritual, slower movement and was able to kind of find my niche that way, but not without thinking that something was wrong with me and comparing myself to all these teachers.
Just a little bit that you've told me, like your system definitely feels safer with gentle.
I feel like I need to pay you for this. Because
anytime your system gets like fast and hard pressure put on it, you go into like,
yes,
like you retreat. Yes. So, and then you're like,
thank you.
I'm not doing that.
Dr. Lauren, thank you.
So always gentle approach for you.
I love that.
Doesn't mean you can't titrate into more intensity.
Yes.
But if you go straight to intensity, you're not going to do it.
I'm not going to do it. I'm overwhelmed.
No. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's just respecting your physiology. And that's it.
But that's good to know because I definitely do try to force the intensity sometimes. So that's very helpful. Even with like, when I grew up, like if I was messy, ADD, messy and like leave like a piece of clothes on the floor instead of like when I'm trying on clothes. And then as soon as it starts to stack up, I'm overwhelmed. I don't want it like, but now it's like, okay, put this one piece, great. It's okay. One thing at a time. But when I let it stack up, I get overwhelmed and I don't want to do it forever. It's just like, that's how I operate for sure. You clock me. But anyways, we do need to wrap up, but thank you so much for being here and sharing all your amazing wisdom and your story with us. I do want to let the people know where they can find you. So if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit more about where the people can find you and also any new projects and anything you want to share coming up.
Yeah, no, I have, I'm building out a program actually online that's going to be kind of intertwined between a curriculum and understanding and learning about the nervous system, but also with coaching.
That's amazing.
It's going to be focused on more, you know, professionals and organizational wellness so that we can help people.
Wow. Sign me up.
Yeah. Like really like optimize themselves without burning out and keeping themselves healthy. But it's obviously going to translate into the real world for them as well. And keeping themselves, you know, how the relationships in their home is operating. So a little bit bigger scale of the nervous system. I'll still be treating one-on-one, but I really wanted a way to help more people at one time, essentially. And obviously speaking and things like that. But I'm on Instagram. I put a lot of information on there. So Dr.
I will Lauren DeSico, all the details. DPT.
Yep. Yeah. And then, I have a website and
amazing. Like that, and so. Do you take clients? Is it all in person? Is it all do you do some via Zoom?
Yeah. Most of my, right now it's in person.
Yeah.
But that is actually, that's going to be very limited in person.
I think I saw your Instagram post. About
that. I'm in the Coconut Creek area. So I'm going to have less in-person office hours, but then more opportunity for virtual.
Great.
And hopefully maybe some group stuff.
And you're taking some new clients?
Right now I am. Yes.
Yay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I still have room for new clients. But
amazing. Well, thank you so much for being here. I've learned so much and I feel like I need to pay you. I've gotten so much out of this session. So thank you so much, Lauren.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Hello and welcome. My name is Megan Lucky and this is A Lucky Life. Come along with me as I try and get to know myself better and hopefully help you get to know yourself better too.